It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
That's how all the old recordings always sounded to me when they first turned it on. There was this weird sort of a feedback sound.
Really?
On old recordings, yeah. I might have imagined it. I was on a lot of drugs as a kid.
You know, there's a whole generation of people who can say that.
Yes.
Who can actually say that and mean it. I was on a lot of drugs when I was a kid. Yeah. Ritalin.
I mean, just today at work, I was talking to somebody about something and something that I had misconstrued or whatever over IM, and I was like, well, you see, at this point in the day, I am really drunk. And it was like 10 o'clock. I was like, yeah, I have a breakfast bottle of vodka most days because Trish drives, so I can do that. And then later I saw them actually at their desk, and they were on a WebEx, so they had their headset on and they were like talking to people. And I came over and I said, hey, that bit I said about breakfast vodka, you know that stays between us, right? And she's like, I didn't tell him. I said, can they hear? She's like, did you guys hear Tony say that? She's like, no. I'm like, I said. Yeah. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast. The only podcast in the world that's not in bed with big quinoa.
Nope.
I'm Tony.
I'm William, and this is episode 234.
Yes. What the fuck is he doing?
I don't know.
Is there something out there?
No.
He's attacking the window, right?
Yep.
So there must be something.
I don't see anything.
Kitten, what'd you hide? All right, then.
But that's right. Only small quinoa growers.
Yes.
Not
well, you know, the big industrial quinoa. I love quinoa.
Yeah, it's good.
Everybody loves quinoa. It's the most nutritious thing ever. And you know, it has been a main staple of the people of Bolivia for generations.
Sure, sure.
It is quickly not becoming a staple.
Yeah.
Because it's so fucking popular everywhere that it's worth more for them to sell it rather than eat it. So they sell it and then they eat shittier foods instead. So all of our love of quinoa is ruining Bolivia.
Yep.
Welcome to episode 234. We have not yet recorded 233.
Nope, we haven't.
So at this point, I would like to apologize.
Although they've heard it by this time.
For whatever we did in episode... What are you doing, kitten? Ah, you're a big, cute dork. By the way, what did we call that episode?
233?
Yeah, I'm not asking you, I'm asking them.
Oh. I'm sure they'll tell us.
We still haven't got two-way podcast worked out. For those of you just joining us, it's 2 weeks ago. Did I blow your mind? Here's the way the show works. Oh, kitten, are you going to screw up our recording? Twiglet. Ezzy's not here. Twiglet is here. Twiglet's like Ezzy, but nicer and way bigger.
Pretty big.
Although way skinnier than he used to be. Do you have something you want to say to the mic?
Well, I wasn't suggesting he was overweight. No, he's just a big cat.
He was overweight. He was overweight and showing signs of heading towards diabetes.
Oh, no.
But he has lost a lot of weight. I'm very proud of him. To be fair, he had little control over it because we just fed him less food. But I'm very proud of him for not murdering us in our sleep, I guess. Anyway, for those of you just joining us, we have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address. themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people, good people, like yourselves, write into that address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, questions, topics, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest within physically within the hat itself. Twiglet? Servants. not even trying anymore. Draw the note card. Okay, you're sitting on the mixer now. I don't know if that's going to be good or not. You're just straight up sitting on the mixer. And William is now preoccupied with whatever was preoccupying Twiglet at the window. Any second now, William's going to start pawing at the glass.
Well, there appears to be some kind of insect, large insect, crawling around on the window.
Inside or outside?
Outside.
All right, good.
And there's a large spider that looks pretty excited about it, too, but the bug's not really getting that close to the web.
So. Is the spider also outside?
Yes.
All right, good. Anyway, these people, me and William, draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored. That's the whole show. We do that for about an hour. Seriously, kitten, you're just sitting on the mixer.
That is weird.
Knobs and shit are gonna you're gonna clench your butt and turn the volume up or something. Butt. Your little kitty butt.
Okay, well, everything seems to be working all right, so I don't suppose there's anything for us to worry about.
So, how has not this coming week, but the week after that gone for you? And don't say anything about the coming week.
No.
Spoilers, you know.
Wait a minute. So this is the 1st of September that this is going to be airing, is that right?
Is it the actual 1st? It's that week.
Thursday, the September 1st, I think.
No, it's September 1st is a Tuesday. This is September 3rd.
Okay.
Why must you lie?
And Labor Day is going to be...
The 7th.
Okay. I have no idea what's going to be going on in the last week of August. You know, hopefully nothing. My July and August
were good weeks.
So much more eventful than I, you know, like my life to be, so...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this summer... Well, as I said 2 weeks ago, hurt like a mother.
So I don't think I'll have anything
to after this trip that I'm currently on as I'm speaking to you. I basically have no more trips for the rest of the year. I mean, like, we'll go visit Trish's family for Thanksgiving and Christmas and stuff, but no real trips. And I'm so happy about that.
The next time I'm going to do any gaming is the 2nd Saturday in September, which that won't be before this.
Dave of Id, has he been quizzing you on a convention?
Yes.
Yeah. Dave of Id is feeling people out for a small convention in the area. Actually, if you're listening to this and you want to get put in touch with Dave, if you're still listening, comment on the blog and tell people. And anybody who's from... the old Quad Cities Happy Jack C team. Go check it out because, I mean, you guys are in the Quad Cities. It's not that far. We're talking about, like, Cedar Rapids for, like, a little con kind of thing. That could be awesome. So, in October, I think.
Yeah, that's what he was talking about.
Check that out. Yeah.
Would that compete with Icon? Because Icon usually has their thing.
Ooh.
I didn't say anything to him about it because I forgot, but.
Icon's, I always forget when Icon is because I don't go anymore.
I'm pretty sure it's late in October.
Make sure it's around then. Make sure it's not the same weekend as Icon.
Yeah, because I...
You will lose that fight.
Probably.
Not to me. I'll show up to your thing. Other people.
Likewise. But yes, there are a lot of people who would go to
Icon. And trust me, you don't want a gaming convention that's just me and William. It's basically like this.
Yeah.
This is it right here. I see you. You want to chew on that cord, don't you? Okay, Twiglet. You know I love you. You are my first kitty that, like, I actually had my kitty. But if you ruin my sound equipment by chewing on it, I will end you. I really love Twiglet, and I threaten to end him a lot.
So what does that say about you and or the cat?
That statistically speaking, he could die at any second.
But this is how you are with creatures that you love.
I don't know. I don't threaten to end Ezzy, and Ezzy's way worse than him. Ezzy's a pain in the ass.
Maybe you think in a fight with Ezzy you would stand to lose.
There is that. Alright, so, hat?
Sure, why not?
Okay.
Unless you've got something to make up about your last week of August.
I'm in Oregon right now.
You are?
Yes.
Oh, that's right,
you are. In fact, as we speak, or as you listen, if you listen early on Thursdays, on Thursday is what I'm saying, I'm probably visiting my 100-year-old grandmother right now, who may or may not recognize me.
Well, that's very good. That's a good thing to do.
Eh.
If there was a new Star Trek series, who would you pick for the captain? Probably Tony. I think I could be a starship captain, but I think
you would make a better first officer.
I think that too. So I think you. I think I'd pick you.
See, I love that because of how you took that. But if you answer the question legitimately, your answer is Kate Mulgrew.
No, she's
It'd
already
be
done
Star
it.
Trek Voyager 2.
Not Kate
Electric
Mulgrew.
Electric Balugaloo.
But maybe I would cast...
Definitely a fucking woman.
Yeah.
No question, woman.
Claudia Black.
Oh, nice.
Because...
Nicely done.
Because in Dragon Age, she plays Kate Mulgrew's daughter.
Oh, fuck you. Way to turn me around on it.
No. I just said that because I knew that's how you'd react. No, I still say Claudia Black because she's awesome.
Claudia Black is a good choice. I don't know, though. She makes a way better rebel than she would. I don't know.
I like Claudia Black.
I feel like she might stifle in the Starfleet environs.
Well, I'd like it, obviously. We both would both prefer a woman, again, yeah. Well, of course, the Enterprise has never had a female captain. But
actually... You know who else is banging around all sorts of sci-fi things and doing a great job, but really is underutilized and who would make a great Starfleet captain?
Okay, who's that?
Ming-Na.
Oh, yeah.
Except now she's Ming-Na Wen or Ming-Na Jones or some shit. She got married or
something. That's a good idea.
She'd be good. Don't get me wrong. I love Claudia Black. I totally would put Claudia Black on this show. I don't know that she's Starfleet captain material. I see her more as the pilot, as the human, or the human analog pilot of some sort of weird hybrid warship / prison ship. I'm making a Farscape joke, people.
Well, now how about? I mean,
she should drive Talon.
Should the captain be other than human?
Oh,
because there's that aspect too.
Oh, God. For those of you who don't think I have a filter, I just stopped myself from the most atrocious joke ever.
Good.
It was
We're
really
happy.
Bad.
No good.
I'm ashamed that I thought of it.
Yeah, I am too. But I mean...
Might have been funny though.
No. Back away.
Well, not now.
Okay, good.
You can't
good.
Do it now, but at the time.
But I mean, what race would you pick for... That
not Vulcan, been
not,
done,
not Klingon.
No, ooh, the problem is it's not female, but if we set it a little bit ahead, we could make the captain be Rom from DS9. Dude, the first ever Ferengi Starfleet captain,
that would be something.
Mm hmm.
Or what about if we took, what if it was, what's that race where they're green and usually that you see them as women are like prostitutes?
Oh, I don't know. The green slave women? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what race that is. I thought you were going to go for the ones with the Andromedans or whatever that have the Dealey Bobbers.
No, not the Dealey Bobbers. But here you have...
Tribble. The first ever Starfleet Tribble captain.
But it...
Oh.
But, But the...
No, let's make that. I would watch the shit out of that. The whole crew is human, and they interact with the captain, write it straight, like, write lines for the captain that would make sense as a Star Trek thing, but then all we hear is just... all the time.
Almost as if R2-D2 was the captain.
Yeah, but everybody else can understand the captain.
Maybe maybe android captain.
Oh, God, no.
The first android captain.
I don't know if you noticed this during Next Generation, but we took the concept of an android and beat it into the fucking ground.
I don't know. In Voyager, when they had
the
artificial intelligence be a hologram or whatever, I thought, wow, they've taken this concept and sort of breathed new life into it, no pun intended, because, like you said, with Data, they just really overdid it.
Except it doesn't make any sense now, because why the hell did we spend so long unable to give emotions to an android, but we can totally fucking give emotions to a hologram?
Well, there were a lot of problems with the whole android doesn't have any emotions, and that later on it's sort of admitted, like, well, we can just hear, there's a chip, boink, there, now you have emotions, you can shut it off whenever you feel like it.
Yes, but
so the whole,
we spent many years
before
we got there.
I know, the whole...
And in fact, we invented a second one, and we had to steal it.
Yeah.
And it was still gone for a while.
It never made sense, really. It never made any sense.
Well, and it completely flies in the face, or vice versa, of the Voyager stuff.
Yes.
Of the Doctor stuff. Now,
but it wasn't logically consistent, even in the Enterprise stuff, so...
Well, and Star Trek... sometimes we forget this because Star Trek, it is so overshadowed by the fact that Star Trek is so shitty with their time travel. But Star Trek's pretty shitty with their AI also.
Yeah, I'd say so. In general.
With what that means. Yep. Because they just want to be dealing with it in metaphoric concepts.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't really... But yeah, like, I really liked the Mass Effect universe had AI, which were, like, dangerous and rare and fucked shit up. But you also had VI, virtual intelligence, which is basically a hyped up version of Cleverbot, where we put enough shit in it and enough algorithms that it totally will interact with you and it'll totally seem like it's a person.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not actually an independent intelligence.
Yeah.
And in my mind, that has to be what the Doctor is in Voyager. But very early on, that's not the case, because otherwise it wouldn't have been an interesting character. And also, one of the conceits that Star Trek liked to do is everybody in the future has so many records about them, and they are so detailed that computers can totally simulate their personality via records.
Yeah.
They did it. That's how Geordi fell in love with that woman in the holodeck. And that's how the Doctor things work, because the Doctor's not... created out of whole cloth. The Doctor is an artificial version of an actual dude.
Yeah, well, it was also
named
though,
Robert Picardo.
It was also kind of part of the... actually, you got the sense that had they not gotten lost, he would have been maintained by someone. I mean, this thing that you're talking about, where he's not a whole person, a real person, would have sort of manifest itself through the fact that every once in a while someone would go to maintain him, and then they would reboot everything, and that he kind of became a whole person because they got lost, and the program itself had to adapt, and so his person.
And eventually,
sort of
we threw some future tech at him to increase that.
Sure.
So he grew and shit, which again fits totally in line with the themes that you go for in this kind of thing, but doesn't fit in with the making sense.
Well, stuff. They tried to have it make some kind of sense, but no, it didn't.
One of my favorite characters in Voyager, Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Some of the best episodes centered around him.
Tom Paris? And... Fuck that guy. But I shouldn't say that. Tom Paris was one of the weakest characters. Well, Kim. Okay, Kim was the weakest. But Tom Paris was weak. But all the characters, they did pretty well with them. And in fact, I hate to say it because she was also one of my favorite characters. But one of the characters they probably did the worst with was Seven of Nine. Because I feel like she was just painted in such broad strokes.
Well, yeah. I was watching it, I thought, man, I can think of 1,000 things they could do here that they're just not doing.
But the Doctor and Seven of Nine interaction episodes.
Pretty good, yeah.
One of those straight up made me cry. Oh, yeah. Never has happened in any other Star Trek. But yeah, in general, Voyager was not my favorite series. But they did well with character growth in that, and character development.
Sure.
Better than a lot of the other Star Trek shows.
Plus Kate Mulgrew.
Plus Kate Mulgrew.
Yep.
Well, not just Kate Mulgrew. Well, I mean, it's true in Star Trek as a whole, but Voyager had a very attractive cast all around. Oh, Alana Torres, Chakotay. Holy crap. There were a lot. So, you know, I didn't come to terms with my bisexuality until college. But now looking back, I can understand a lot of things from earlier in my life that I did not interpret correctly. And some of these are that I had very complex feelings about Eric Estrada on the show Chips.
You did, huh?
Yes. And because of certain similarities in the facial features and things, I feel like a lot of those had got to get processed through Chakotay. I feel like Chakotay was my next generation of paunch from Chips. Crush. Well, yeah,
there was at least one episode where he was naked.
Mm.
At least one.
Mm.
We would joke about it and we called him Chicote because because there was just a little bit of a butt shot in that episode.
Mm.
We thought it was funny. I don't think
anyone. You can't say his name without sounding like you're very emphatic.
I don't think anyone in our household was allured by it. We thought it was kind of over the top. But I suppose some people might have.
Chicote was a handsome man.
Okay, well.
And the only face tattoo that hasn't looked like the stupidest fucking thing in the world. And I hate to say this entire Maori population, but I'm including you guys. It's your culture. It's fine. I'm not into it. I don't know what it is. But on Chakotay, I was down with that. DTT, down to tattoo. Yeah.
What was the question?
On tonight's episode, I confess my unrequited passion for Eric Estrada.
And that guy who played Chakotay.
And that guy who played
whose
Chakotay.
Name we probably, unless you can remember his name. What was his name?
Rick Schroeder, I think.
No, it was you, dummy.
As a kid, he was on Silver Spoons. And then Voyager. And then later NYPD Blue. And I think a short stint on Scrubs. That is true. Rick Schroeder was on Scrubs.
Okay, okay.
As a character named
not on,
Nurse Flowers.
Not on Voyager, though. Should we draw something else, or are we...
I'm just going to bask in my enjoyment of the fact that I claim that Rick Schroeder played Chakotay on Voyager. That is going to keep me warm at night for a while. I'm proud of that one. Is it too big to just call this Rick Schroeder as Chakotay?
I don't know.
I don't feel as good. I feel like it's a spoiler for the episode.
Okay.
So yeah, Ming-Na Wen is our captain.
Okay.
Or possibly Claudia Black, but it would have to be a more of
but
a
she'd have to be
episode.
Painted green.
And a little window into William there.
I'm just saying that.
Yeah.
This is a race that's only portrayed in sexually, even in the reboot when one of these women is in Starfleet,
yep.
They sexualize her. So wouldn't it be cool to make one of them a captain? That would be cool.
A sexy captain?
No. Just a captain.
This one is from Coffee.
Oh.
So, you know, on asterisks, or an asterisk, that's a difficult word. An asterisk indicates that an email has been abridged or digested.
Yeah.
Because it was too long to fit on a note card.
Yeah.
This one has 3 asterisks.
Why?
Because it is so abridged.
Okay. Sorry, Coffee, if we don't get the gist.
Coffee, that you can't not write a gigantic email.
Well,
that's not going to fit on a 3.5 by 2.5 inch card.
Hopefully the hat got the gist.
Hopefully.
And go to the blog and tell us if it didn't.
I don't understand this, so this will be fun.
Okay.
Theory says, solar system moves like comet. With sun in center, planets move around in vortex pattern.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
What do you think of theory?
Well,
I love how when you bridge it, it sounds like a caveman.
From what I understand...
You keep it with the other one so we don't get lost. Where is the other one?
I don't know.
Did you already lose the other one?
Did I lose it? I thought I gave it to you.
Oh, it might be here. All right, good.
My understanding is this is not an approved theory of how the solar system travels through the universe.
All right.
And I could be wrong about this, but last I heard, okay, so there was this sort of a graphical representation of the solar system and how it moves the universe and it looked very much like that, like a comet. And it was pretty, and people were sharing it around like, wow, isn't this cool? A cool perspective on how, you know, if you could step back and see the solar system as a whole and watch it move relative to the rest of the universe, how it would look. But then a lot of scientists came out and said, okay, this is a pretty and spectacular graphic, but it's not reflective of any, you know, scientific theory that's out there.
Yeah.
As regards how the solar system would move in some relative way through the universe. So I'm unsure as, first of all, I'm not sure there is a theory that says this.
Not a scientific theory. I mean, I could make a theory right now. So
well,
a theory
no,
that it does this,
I suppose.
But not a scientific
theory. And the person who, well, okay, fine. And the person who made it obviously thought it was a pretty way to portray the solar system to look at it.
Sometimes when you're uncertain, you sound like you're about to vomit.
if there's a scientist somewhere who thinks that, yeah, from a given perspective in relative time and space, this is what this would look like, I don't know of any scientist who says that.
I love the idea that we consider scientist a category. Like, what's... Because think about it. What qualifies you to be a scientist?
Well, I think when people say that, they mean a person who does have a degree or job that says...
I don't think there's any actual requirement or accountability for that.
Well, I think...
It's like
it depends
fish.
On what you, it depends on what you mean. I mean, for example, that's kind of the whole point behind any kind of credential, is that the other people who have this credential hold one another accountable.
Yes, but there are specific
so
metric credentials in that instance. So somebody says, I'm a lawyer. That has a very specific definition
as,
we can point
as
to.
As do a lot of claims to be a scientist. You have
no, if it's a more specific claim, if they say, I'm a neurobiologist, something like that. But to just say, I'm a scientist, I don't think there's any easily identifiable required credential to define that.
It seems to me there is, or at least I assume when someone says that, what they mean is they have an advanced degree in science and their occupation is either they are a researcher or a teacher pursuant to that particular degree, a PhD usually.
Okay.
Master's degree maybe.
But so somebody with a bachelor's in physics who's working in the physics field doesn't count as a scientist?
I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, and the reason that strikes me as being a very good question is because my spouse works at IDT, Integrated DNA Technologies.
DNA, baby. Spells DNA.
I'm pretty sure that there are a lot of people who work in the lab who are casually called scientists who may or may not have even a master's degree. they might have a bachelor's degree, but they work in science labs in a science type of capacity, and they might call themselves scientists and be called scientists. But in that case, that's sort of their job title, you know. I mean,
yeah.
So that still serves as a kind of credential.
But
that they're being allowed because
then the other side is, I think there are people who don't necessarily have the proper background, but maybe they do, in educationally speaking, who as an avocation do a great deal of experimental work in something frequently tied into engineering or whatever, who consider themselves scientists, who refer to themselves as scientists, who other people refer to as scientists, but who don't have that qualification. I feel like it's a much more nebulous term than a lot of equivalents in other fields.
Maybe.
Like fish. From what I have learned, there is no agreed upon scientific definition of a fish. And they didn't figure this out until one guy sought to define it and realized that nobody had a definition.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't go so far as to say it's like completely up for grabs or something, but I suppose there are a few people who make that claim about themselves and that other people, say in media, will go along with, that doesn't fit the criteria that we have so far laid out in terms of having it be some kind of professional designation, either through education or occupation.
Well, and, you know, I mean, you can argue it happens that, but people do that with doctor all the time, too. But to me, that one's much more black and white as to whether that's a lie or not. I feel like whether or not you're a scientist, if you say you're a scientist, it depends on some shit. I feel like to some people, being a scientist is talking about perspective and methodology more than necessarily specific qualification.
I suppose I can. I think I understand.
I feel like scientist is more, has more of a behavioral definition.
So someone might say they're a scientist in the same way they'd say they're a skeptic, or that they're
possibly, yeah. Yes, and with varying degrees, because somebody, yeah, could say it just in that context, or somebody could say it because they do a bunch of sciencey shit all the time, and maybe they even get paid for sciencey shit, but it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, that kind of thing. It's hard to say.
When I talk about scientists when I use a vague terminology like that, and them saying such and such or so and so, I mean people in the field who, you know, have degrees and are doing the research, and because of that, in our culture, we, I hope, reasonably rely on them to give us insight into these things. Those of us who don't study that particular subject, haven't made a study of that subject in our life,
even being aware that all the clinical trials that don't put forth the hypothesis they want won't get published.
No, I try to take that into account. But that's part of the whole process of science.
Back to this ridiculous question Coffee asked. When I hear this, because I had never heard anything about this.
Yeah.
I hear this, and it's very weird, because my first thought is, don't we just know? I mean, like, don't we know exactly how the solar system moves through the galaxy? And then I'm like, why would we know that? I mean, I can understand why we would put together some theories, but, and it's just, I think it's from growing up in a world where I have seen so many pictures in science textbooks and people talk about all this stuff, that I just assume at some point, you know, some part of my brain assumes we went out far enough that we could just look at it and take a picture. I take for granted that we know what the Earth looks like, which we only really had it proven a few decades ago.
Yeah. Well, I think the problem, there are a lot of theoretical problems with this graphical representation. For example, I mean, even with a comet, the reason it has a tail, you know, the reason it has something shooting off in a particular direction is because there's a particular direction, solar wind, you know, coming toward it.
Yeah. Right? And it's not to do with its velocity. It has to do with the position of the solar wind.
Things like that.
So sometimes comets can go tail first. I think I've seen stuff about that.
I don't know, but this graphical representation almost makes it look as though the shape of the orbits relative to the sun and everything, like there's some drag or something. The solar system is going in a particular direction, and some of the planets are sort of dragging behind and making this kind of corkscrew kind of configuration.
Weirdly, there is no
that doesn't really make
wind
any sense.
Shear in space.
That doesn't really make sense in terms of that's not how things work, especially at that scale. So yeah, there's a lot of lack of understanding about, well, just a lot of things in that graphical representation. But I don't think any scientist says that there's a theory about this. I think it's just this pretty picture.
But it just shows how little I know. And this drives me crazy when people talk about, you know, the truth and don't listen to the crazy theories on the internet and stuff. And it's like, the stuff I know, like, I believe in global climate change. But do you know why I believe in global climate change?
Well, I suppose because there's data.
No.
No?
No.
Because people...
Well, I'll put it to you this way. I've never seen any of that data.
Oh, you've never seen it?
I have seen an occasional graph jam of it or whatever. But I mean, like, I didn't see the original studies or anything like that.
There, there's a lot of taking the word of people who have claimed to have looked at the data and crunched it.
The reason is the vast majority of people who are in positions where I feel like they should know agree. And to be fair, and I hate to say this because I think this is a terrible and dangerous movement that has started, but that's also the only reason I believe vaccines don't cause autism.
Sure, but
people have told me that the studies show that this is not the case and that the things that are in vaccines wouldn't, and it doesn't even make any sense that they would. But I don't really know what's in vaccines.
Yeah, I
and
understand.
I haven't looked at any of these studies. And so people could tell me that the solar system moved like a comet through the galaxy. And I'd be like, that's weird. But if enough of them told me, I'd be like, I guess so. I don't know.
Well,
and I'm never gonna know.
No, that's true. I mean, and it's not just about the world we live in or the culture or anything like that. We're dealing with certain phenomena, certain subjects that.
Sorry, I thought you said phenomena.
Phenomena. To understand them, to run the experiments to test them, even, requires so much specialized knowledge that it would just be impossible, in principle, for a significant number of people to be privy to all of this and to know exactly what's going on.
And
we have to take the word of that small group of people.
I would need a shit ton of more schooling just to understand it.
You
can dumb it down, and there are some exceptions, but there's a lot of things out there that I'm like, I would need a lot more to really
grasp. I suppose. I mean, my experience with, because I don't actually like to take, I mean, I have, there's a certain point where obviously I have to take a person's word for things, because even if I read a paper and I understand it, which I usually can, I still have to believe that when they say these are the data points, that those are the data points.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you can look at the statistical analysis and think, wow, they were really massaging those numbers and stuff like that. But there comes a point where if you're knowledgeable enough about statistical analysis and things,
I'm not,
and I'm not that much either, just a little bit, there comes a point where you have to say, well, they crossed all their T's and dotted all their I's, but that still doesn't mean that this is right. There could be a lot of things wrong with this that I can't even know, and I have to trust that the data that, you know, I have to trust that they didn't, well, for example, then when they saw a piece of data that was way out,
they didn't just eliminate
it. They just didn't say, well, this is so wrong. It's got to be an aberration, so we're just going to cut it out. Or that they didn't deliberately. I mean, because that's actually an acceptable research thing to do. That's not...
A true outlier is a thing, yeah.
Yeah, that's not a bad thing. But also, there are things that you can do that are really cheating, that are really kind of fudging it to make it work.
What I said, clinical trials, and you just publish the ones that got the result you
were
looking for.
Sure, or you work all the time. Or you work for a boss or a company that wants a particular result.
Yes.
I mean, these things do happen. And you read this and you say, okay, well, there's nothing obviously wrong from a statistical analysis, I don't see anything particularly wrong with their method, although most of the time you can find something wrong just with the method. The sample size is too small or whatever. But if all of that seems to be where it belongs, there's not a lot you can do. This comes up with the whole GMO question. Now, regardless of where you stand on the GMO question, here's a reality of how GMOs enter our food system. Now, whether you think they're safe or not is not really the point. Here's the point. If a company wants to introduce a GMO into our food system, they have to submit a report to the government. They have to. And the things that they have to account for are all the things, I mean, at least I've looked at the law. It seems to me all the things you would want it to account for in terms of safety and all this other stuff. However, the government doesn't test these things. If the company...
So they just trust the report.
That's right. They just trust the report. Now, assuming that they go over the report carefully, which is probably already too much to assume, but let's assume they do, all they can do is what I just said. They can, okay, well, their statistics seem to be okay. Their sample size seems to be okay. All they can do is verify that the work is neat, basically, and that all the paperwork's filled out. But the results and the data points and all that stuff, they have to completely trust the company in terms of what they're saying. And so you tell me, do you think that's a trustworthy way to introduce a product onto the market? Well, I don't personally think so. And this isn't about whether GMOs are safe or not. It's about, are GMOs tested? And for me, if the company tests it and the government just reviews their work and makes sure the paperwork looks okay and then lets it go into the food supply, that's not good enough
for
me.
That's true for
in terms of testing.
Tremendous number
of
things.
Drugs and a lot of other things.
Yeah.
That's right.
But that's the thing. It's so easy to show this isn't a trustworthy system, but go the other direction, the things that we do trust. And you described what you do, which is woefully inadequate and still...
Yeah.
An order of magnitude more effort than I or most other humans will ever put into any of this.
Not just most than that most other will. It's more than most than an average person should.
And way more than we will, and definitely more than I will.
More than a person should, really.
And so, ultimately, my opinion on most any scientific, even socially scientific in most cases, situation is based off of two things. My own personal feelings about whether or not I want X to be true or Y to be true. Whether or not I would prefer to live in a universe in which X was true or Y was
sure,
true.
Sure, sure.
And how the majority is stating it.
Also, to an extent, your personal experiences. I mean,
yes, but frequently those barely touch at all.
Okay.
And in fact, again, global climate change is a great one for this. My personal experiences with regard to that are so limited and so, like, I've had plenty of experiences that seem to fly in the face of it, but then I've seen explanations of why that's the case. I think my personal experience, I don't think can even matter. And so it comes down to most people in the scientific community agree in global climate change, and the people who most often oppose it seem like assholes to me. But that's my entire base. And what you get down to is hegemonic thinking.
I mean, it's really close to the whole common sense argument here.
I know.
Most people agree. And every once in a while, especially when I like to laugh or be scared of the anti-vaccination movement, which I do think is hilarious and I am afraid of, I'm like, based on what? I mean, because I'll be totally honest, I don't actually know that the measles outbreaks that occurred. Because they didn't happen here. I don't know anybody who got measles. I'm pretty confident that wouldn't have just been a scam. But the point is, all of my stuff is third hand, fourth hand, and it's based on what does the majority agree with and slash what do I want to be true?
Well, I look into these things deep enough to find out usually they're a lot more nuanced than it seems. Mm-hmm. Well, like the whole,
which makes sense.
Like the whole GMO thing. Again, this what I expressed was a reality of how GMOs enter the food system. That has nothing to do with whether or not they're safe or hurting anyone. But that's the reality of how that works. And to me, that's a nuanced thing that people ought to take into account. The measles outbreak, that's a very good thing that you just mentioned, because some of these outbreaks aren't always focused on a place where a person didn't get vaccinated. So there's a lot of nuance there.
And the fact that, like, I'm not even implying, although I'm not implying a conspiracy.
I'm not implying
a situation where the government knows that the vaccines are going to give kids autism, but it's worth it for the healthcare savings we have for not having these diseases. Now, here's the thing. That's not what I'm talking about, but side note, that could also be true, and how would I know?
That's right.
It just seems implausible, but I don't have anything to back up. But I'm talking about the far more common situations where we're just wrong, we invent fucking Olestra, and people eat it for a long time before we find out that it makes your butt leak. And that's just a little version. What if we're just wrong?
This is kind of what I was getting at. When you look closer at these things, you find a lot of nuance, and that's fine. But nothing gets clearer. Nothing gets cleared up at all. For example,
Brontosaurus is a dinosaur again.
We know.
It stopped being a dinosaur for a while. Now it's a dinosaur again.
The vaccination thing
They got goddamn feathers.
Which
is kind of cool.
The vaccination thing is very interesting because we know how vaccines work. We know.
I don't. I mean, well, I know no, what the I'm, theory, what I'm
saying
but
is,
again.
Yeah, yeah. What I'm saying is we've got some reasonable understanding of how vaccines can help eradicate disease. But there is such a thing as boosters. Why do we need boosters? Well, because vaccines get less effective over time. Why is that? And we're not entirely sure how that is. Mm. But that also accounts for outbreaks, not just people not getting vaccinations. Yeah. So when you look closer at these things because you want to have a better understanding, I don't. But if you did, you wouldn't really get a better understanding.
No.
You would just get a more nuanced understanding. So at the end of it all, no matter what you do, you're going to have to rely on a small group of people to tell you how things are, which is the very definition of elitism and hegemony and everything you just said. So you can't, there seems to be no escape for it.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is a historic day here. It's August 20th, but in your world, it's September 3rd or later. William has told me, don't even bother trying to learn the truth about things because it won't help you understand any better.
I'm not saying don't bother trying. I'm saying...
Well, you've convinced me of that.
No.
I don't want to put that on you. I wasn't going to try anyway.
I think it's worth understanding nuance because I think that when people realize that these issues have nuance, maybe they'll stop taking such extreme perspectives on it, and maybe they'll find some real answers. But there is an aspect to this that is pretty much inescapable, which is eventually when you have to get what the quote-unquote real answer is, you are going to have to rely on experts in the field, and you can't get past that. So we have to make sure those experts are reliable somehow. But see, what we fall back on is that science, the process of science itself, is going to make them reliable because...
Yes, science is infallible, essentially.
Yeah, which is not true.
No.
And, I mean, we're finding all the time that there are
it's not meant to be infallible in its design, but also on top of that, the execution is imminently fallible.
Right. We're running into all kinds of situations.
Bad science all the time.
Oh, yeah. Lots of bad science, bad scientists. I mean, and...
You know, the Nazi guys.
But the thing is, it's kind of like the media, though.
They were bad scientists.
In theory... in theory, the media should be out there tattling on anybody who has influence, who's abusing that influence, you know, abusing voters or lying to voters or abusing workers or whatever. But the media gets bought and the news gets to be something that's manufactured. And so this force for democracy or whatever that media is supposed to be ends up not being. And the same thing can happen to our science institutions. They can be corrupted. They can be bought.
Is happening to us.
Yeah, they can be taken over. So in theory, science ought to be this thing that has so many checks and balances in it that somehow the truth will percolate out of it and we can trust it. Media ought to be motivated, or its prime, the prime way that it serves its own existence or makes money or whatever, is to tattle on politicians and big business, but it can be corrupted by being bought by those concerns. And so pretty soon you've got a whole population that really doesn't have a choice but to trust their media and trust their scientists, but they're completely being led astray by these things. And the worst part of all of it is, though, that the media itself and the scientists themselves sometimes don't even realize that they've been bought and corrupted.
No, absolutely. Yeah.
They think they're still doing their job. Mm. They think they're still beyond reproach, and they still think that they're still telling the truth, but they're not.
Well, in the same way that we think we are reasoned and informed individuals who have looked at the information and decided for ourselves, not people who have just been told and we decided who we were going to believe.
That's right. That's right. But I do think you can dig into it. You can find the nuance and realize that, well, I am not all that informed and science isn't all that certain about it. So you can at least come to a place where your level of certainty is commensurate to how much certainty there actually is, rather than taking a firm position somewhere because someone told you to, and not only do you not really know, but they don't really know either.
I just learned of some of the rampant sexism that exists behind Wikipedia, and that was kind of scary. But can we talk for a second about homeopathy?
Okay.
We need to talk about this as a public service announcement, because this has become an issue a couple of times.
An issue with who?
Various people.
Okay.
I am going to trust that you are familiar with homeopathy.
Oh, well, I'm familiar with a certain version of it that's been discussed with me in an academic context.
Okay.
I think I've heard that terminology applied to a lot of different things that I didn't know.
Which is not. That this is the problem.
Okay.
Homeopathy at this point, in many circles, is becoming synonymous with alternative medicine, nature-based medicine.
Yeah, like a catch-all.
Holistic practices.
Yeah, 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 which is not how it was introduced to me.
Which is not what it is.
Okay, okay.
Homeopathy is a very specific discipline invented by a specific person with specific principles that are the most raving bullshit ever.
Now, let's make sure that I understand. I'll tell you what I think it is, and you can correct me if I have it wrong. The idea is that you can dilute a substance so much to the point where the substance practically or even actually doesn't exist, but its essence remains in there, and so then you can get the medicinal benefits of the substance from what's essentially water.
Yes, and it's worse than that. There are three guiding principles to homeopathy.
Okay.
And one of them I always forget.
I'm on the right track.
Yes, that's the big sticking point. One of them I always forget, and I don't. But here's the thing: there are a variety of sources to give you good information on homeopathy, but the Wikipedia resource is pretty good.
Okay,
it gives you a pretty historical picture.
Okay,
but I've other places too, because I eventually was like, I feel like I know what it is, but what is? So I looked it up in a few places. But there are three guiding principles, and the first and foremost involves the concept that a piece. This one I don't hate, but you have to understand that this was invented out of some dude's ass. Like, the fact that it may correspond with things now is coincidence.
Okay.
But he had a theory that I don't want to say a poison, but a piece of something that is harmful, a piece of it given to someone in small enough doses can cure them of the ailment. If you are poisoned by something, ingesting small amounts of that poison can cure you of that
poison. An inoculation.
Yes, which came later.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
But still not exactly an inoculation, but Yes. Something like
that. And there's a third one. I don't remember. It probably involves colors. But the big one. Probably involves colors. The big one, and this is the huge one, and this is what a lot of the stuff is based on, is the theory of dilution.
Yeah.
And the theory is, and I don't understand it at all, but when you dilute something, it becomes more potent. So the typical practice in homeopathic cures is to take whatever the curing agent is,
right,
put it into water,
yep,
agitate it. That is a key. Yeah, the third thing could be the principle of vibration. I don't know. But you agitate it.
Right.
No, not just stir. You like it shake has it to be up, shaken, yeah, basically. Yeah, yeah. And then you take that and you dilute it further and you shake it up more.
Mm-hmm.
And it can go as far. They actually have rankings for it. And if you go out to like a 1,000-to-1 dilution or whatever, that's supposed to be the most potent stuff. The more you dilute it, the more potent it is.
Yeah, I seem to recall that idea.
That's insane. And the background for this is one guy a long time ago made this shit up. Like, there's not... It's the Scientology of science. Like,
well, when it was presented to me in an academic setting, it was specifically in a class where we were investigating all kinds of pseudoscience and and other claims that that had testable implications, and that when you went and test them, it didn't make any sense.
Yeah, and there are things like I'm all for. We don't know everything, and there may be ways. I'm all, you know, alternative medicines.
There's a bunch of
shit that I'm skeptical about, but in general, but this one, like, nothing about it makes sense in the slightest.
Yeah.
And no one has ever been able to point out to me anything wherein it does make sense.
Well, now, again, the term homeopathic medicine or whatever has come to, it does seem like it's come to be a catch-all for just any kind of home remedy.
Socially, yes. Yeah.
But do people, on top of the fact that people aren't using the term that way anymore, do people actually buy into
kind of there is definitely homeopathy is still a thing out there, huh, in that specific sense. And you can go into places and you can buy homeopathic remedies. And that is a real thing. And I think socially speaking, like in the vernacular, homeopathy has become a broader term.
Sure.
I think if you go to a place, if I went to my local alternative medicine shop that was going to sell me essential oils and shit, and they sold me a homeopathic remedy, it would be water.
Okay.
And the reason I bring this up is I have had multiple encounters with people who are very smart, and I'm talking with them, and it just so happened within the conversation that I shit all over homeopathy.
Oh.
And because I do that in conversation because it's bullshit and I hate it and fuck them. So I did this, and the people in question trusted me enough to confide in me shyly that actually they think some of that stuff could be legitimate.
Mm.
And I had to say, what do you think homeopathy is?
And they told you,
and they'd say, broad... you know, alternative medicine. Yeah, so, yeah, and I said, no. Homeopathy is this. And I told them, and they said, oh, that makes no sense. And I said, exactly. And so as a pub, and one of them is a listener to this podcast,
I see,
which is what made me think about it recently. So as a public service, I'm just telling you people, I'm not saying all, I mean, you know, I'm still ambivalent about acupuncture. I've had acupuncture. I don't know how I feel about it. I don't personally believe in concepts of innate, the innate energy thing, that certain chiropractors use, which I didn't even realize. But I understand, I'm not discounting it as an impossibility because, you know, maybe we just don't know how or whatever yet, but no, watering something down does not make it more potent. No. Although Saturday Morning Breakfast had a great thing about that
where he's talking to a guy, says, but think about it. If there are fewer homeopathists per capita, you guys will be even more potent. And the caption just says, I've convinced 187 homeopathists to quit based on this argument. Because homeopathy is dumb, and it's a lie, and it's a dumb lie, and don't do it. It's water. Drink water. That's good for you.
Yeah.
Homeopathic shit there. Yeah. Do that. Yeah, but
probably even has.
But don't try and cure cancer with it and stuff.
No. Yeah. No, that would be bad.
We are out of time.
Okay.
So go back to your houses. And
nothing to see here. Move along.
Hopefully we didn't spoil any of this week, last week, which is next week.
Yeah, hopefully not. Well, there. Yeah, that's right.
We still have the power to decide. But you don't, because you're in the future. And the past was prologue to this. Right now.
Poetic.
But I have no idea what it means.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.